People never reject you, actually. They only reflect to you your own rejection. So if you don't reject something within yourself, you will not send that energy out. I'm rejectable, or this part of me is rejectable. In other words, only things that are suppressed within you will express themselves externally to show you the truth about yourself. So whatever comes is just an information about what's going on inside of you. That's it. That's how you shape your reality. That's how you shape relationship with people, through inner work. And if you can fully integrate all the parts of you, all the parts, own them and accept them, I promise you, you will not experience that kind of rejection in your closest surrounding, because you will not have to. It's not something you will have to work on.
Hello and welcome to The James Zander Trip, where we dive into spirituality, psychedelics, altered states of consciousness, the nature of reality, matters of the heart and the soul, and how we can bring all of this down to earth to empower our mind, connect with love, and uplevel our relationship with life. Joining me today is Dorota Stanchik. When I met Dorota, I sensed this very beautiful spiritual essence in her. And I couldn't put my words on what exactly it was, but I could sense a powerful energy within her. And so I wanted to bring her to the studio to uncover the magic behind that magnetic energy.
Thank you so much. Those are very, very kind words.
It's absolutely true.
I'm very grateful to be here with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just for the audience to know, you are an author. You're a keynote speaker. You wrote a book called Recreate Yourself.
Correct.
And it's all about self-love.
Yes.
And self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a great first question to start with is, what does self-love mean to you?
Ooh, I love that question. And everyone, and there is no right or wrong way to describe it, really. It's whatever that feels to you. But I feel we have such a lot of definitions of love and self-love. And those definitions are very often constructed by the conditioning, our experiences, whatever love and kind of love we experienced as kids. And it might mean something else consciously, and it might mean something very different subconsciously. But for me, self-love is really unconditional acceptance of whatever comes up to the surface without any judgment, without any interpretation, simply holding a space for ourselves and being present with whatever is. And if we would not have all these concepts of self, all these definitions of self, it would be much easier to simply be present with whatever comes up. But because we try to follow a certain idea of ourselves we've created, we often beat ourselves up for not being that person that we want to be, right? And this is where the lack of self-love begins.
So as kids, we have innate self-love?
I believe all the kids are naturally loving towards themselves and towards others. They have fully open heart, full curiosity, playfulness, the lack of judgment. And then whatever happens to them, unfortunately, shapes them in a way that will influence their entire life later on. So most of the things that we experience as adults and most of the liberation we try to create in our life is really unlearning, through unlearning everything that was constructed when we were little.
It's 100%. I feel that, because I remember when I was, let's say, a teenager, I thought I knew everything. And then later on, as you become an adult, you realize,
I don't know anything.
I don't know anything. And I have to unlearn so much.
Absolutely.
And I always wonder, is it just part of the Earth school, the Earth video game, that every person has traumas and has to unlearn certain things? Or is there, was there supposed to be, let's say, an ideal way for a child to be raised, for a family to grow up in a way that wouldn't leave the child with traumas and anxieties and lack of belief and lack of self-love? I always kind of wonder philosophically, what is the supposed path if we weren't so manipulated and divided and taught all these different things that we have to unlearn? And I'm curious if you've ever thought of that.
Absolutely. And this is such a beautiful question. So thank you for framing it. You know, I believe that this path, this journey that is called life, is all about unbecoming. And you can look at it as if, you know, every one of us has this essence inside of us, this divine, limitless, timeless purity that has access to universal knowledge, universal wisdom, that can be sick, that can be unwell. And this is very old, you know, philosophy that exists there for many, many years. And so on top of or around that essence, we have constructed our personality, our belief systems, our alter egos, our masks. All that and every single part of it makes us more far away from that divine essence. And more we build our personality, less connection to the true sense, true awareness of who we are, we have. Because when you think about that, what is before the awareness, right? What is before the personality? What is before the thoughts? What happens before the feelings? If there is someone who is aware of that, what is it? What is it? And what is awareness being aware of awareness? Is it even describable? It's not. So it's nothing that, I wouldn't even say it's nothing. It's not a thing. It's something that is undescribable, uncatchable, unframable, that can be put in any definition because it's everything. And connection to that essence gives you access to everything. And so what this construct, life, I believe, was created in order to reconnect to that essence. This connection is there to experience the process of connection and the process of union. So it has to exist. The disconnection has to exist in order for us to experience the union with the divinity that exists within ourselves, right? But it's a long path. And so our experiences, of course, build that personality, build that masks and concepts, but also transgenerational traumas, because our this doesn't just start here. It starts way before in our family lineage, where all those things that our ancestors went through will be imprinted in our bodies when we are born through our parents, right? And so the process of discovering what has to be, I don't like to say removed because nothing is really separated, but dissolve within that essence, divine essence, wholeness of who we are, is, I believe, what we are here for. And that's the purpose of life.
Discovering that wholeness again.
Exactly, coming back, reconnecting, uniting, I would say, with that wholeness, with that divinity we all have within.
Where did your journey of reconnecting with wholeness begin for you?
My goodness, it was such a long journey. I had, first of all, I had massive ego to deconstruct, first of all. People, you know, when you say, people say about other people who have gigantic egos as something that is really wrong or bad, but it's really a defensive mechanism. So more your childhood was difficult, bigger will grow your ego as a defensive program, because your ego is only there to protect you. But the drive to get enlightenment give you ego itself.
Yes.
Right. So we need that ego. And so my sort of childhood wasn't the easy one. It was, there was a lot of aspects of my childhood that made me extremely insecure, extremely disconnected to myself. and very afraid, very insecure, unsafe. I was constantly feeling a sense of unsafety within myself. I didn't want to be here. I didn't understand why this life was as it was. I couldn't understand people. And I had these abilities as a child, which I believe everyone has. We just forget and disconnect from it. But my whole sort of family lineage was psychic. So it was clairvoyance, clairaudience, healers. And I sort of, you know, was born into a family where my father was a medium. So I had a direct contact with the knowledge of energies, of frequencies, of spirits. And that absolutely terrified me. So it was too much for a child. I was afraid. I completely shut down that part of me. And so it resulted, that and many other things, it resulted in health issues. Because I didn't want to feel this body. I didn't want to feel whatever was there to be felt. I didn't want to feel the fear. So I was in a constant resistance of the feelings that was coming or being present within myself. And I had a heart disease. Then I developed an incurable autoimmune disease. And I was just surviving life. I was dealing with life. I was not fully living until there was a moment, one specific moment in my life when I just had enough of everything. And I said, you know what? I just can't function like that anymore. Like, if I'm supposed to be sick for the rest of my life, so be it. But I stopped the chase. I stopped the sort of chase for otherness, really. Because from the moment I was sick, my goal became to cure myself. And I think it's everyone's goal, right? Whenever you are sick, you just want to cure yourself. But what that means is looking constantly to change who you are. And that attitude itself can't enable the healing.
Mm.
Because if you disconnect from something that is yours, you can't cure it. You actually blocked within your subconscious the information that there is something to be healed within your body, because you disconnect from your own disease. Not only that, you are upset with your own disease. You dislike your own disease. You're repulsed by it. And so you create all this negative energy you are sending towards yourself. So you stop the healing process within yourself. And that was the moment when I gave up that chase. I accepted for the first time that, okay, maybe this was my path. Well, maybe this was my destiny to have that condition. And I sort of remember it was a time where I really stopped believing that there was something more. I stopped believing in, you know, this interconnected energy guiding us. But in the moment of the absolute desperation, I remember myself crying uncontrollably and be like, okay, if this is the way you want it to be, let's be it. Show me whatever you want to show me. I surrender. And I really surrendered.
Who were you talking to in that moment?
The universe.
The universe.
The universe. Yeah. Whoever was there, you know, in this moment, it's like God, universe. I don't like using the word God, but it's the same thing. It's that energy, that something beyond that connects everything and is aware of everything, right? And it's extremely intelligent. And within 2 weeks, I ended up in this Vipassana retreat by complete synchronicities. And I remember walking to the ashram, and there was this old monk who looked at me and said, oh, Vipassana, very easy for you. You meditated many past lives. I'm like, okay, here we go. So now we are talking about past lives. But I started to meditate 7 hours per day, and it was like coming back home. It was literally like coming back home. I could not believe it. Like, everything started to like click in the right places within me. All my this sensibility that I completely numbed as a child started to awaken. I started to have clairvoyant dreams, seeing energies, feeling for the first time in who knows how many years. And that initiated a complete healing process. Now it's been over 12 years I haven't been on any medication.
It's incredible because you had the autoimmune disease for more than 8 years.
Yes.
And within 10 days, completely cured.
Pretty much, yes.
How did you, was it a sensation? How did you know finally that, okay, it's done?
I just knew it. It was just like, but it wasn't even Vipassana. It was the acceptance. It was the acceptance of the disease and love towards the disease that allowed it to cure.
That is so fascinating.
It sounds so simple, but if you had a cancer and I tell you love your cancer, impossible, right?
Right, yeah.
And that's why people don't cure. But if you ask me, if whenever I have any condition in my body, and I strongly believe that any condition is the way to cure. Because our body, when you think about that, is designed to cure itself, right? When you scratch yourself, you heal. Why? Because your body is designed to heal itself no matter what, to survive. So your body will do everything to survive. There is even, I forgot how it's called professionally, but there is, if our body feels we are in danger or we are hurting ourselves, it puts us in coma.
No, wow.
Yes, to survive. Imagine that, right? So if you were hurting yourself, your body will put you in coma. And it's actually, I really need to find what was the professional name for it, but I was fascinated. And so I believe that every condition is there to cure something else that we've been perhaps accumulating within our body, energy, blockage, trauma. It needs to evacuate it. And if we can do it consciously, it's going to do it subconsciously. And subconscious healing is through disease.
Subconscious healing is
happens through disease. And so in order to get yourself out of the way and allow this process to happen, you simply have to surrender. And whatever condition happens, it's like, thank you. Because I don't need to even understand what you are curing right now, what you are healing. But if it got to the point that I have to be sick, it means I was really not ready to process it consciously. And so I surrender to that process. And you send love, you send gratitude. Every single time, I even had COVID, I sent such amazing, just powerful, you know, love and gratitude towards that. And within a day, it was gone. Because it doesn't have to. It doesn't have to go for a long time. It will evacuate what it has to evacuate and it will be gone. But because we block that process by reposing the disease and the condition, we can heal. And of course, there are cases where people have 4-stage cancer, etc., and they will die because they sort of won't be able to get to that place of healing themselves. But there are also cases of people who had 4-stage cancer and they cured.
What is the difference, do you think, between the two cases?
In all the data and research that I found on curing for stage cancer was the same story. Absolute surrender to the condition and absolute acceptance and love of the condition. And understanding is like, wow, this happened for me. This was never supposed to kill me. And when you truly deeply get to that sense, and it's very liberating sense, you know, you get to that inner knowing, you know that you will be cured. You just know it. And in my case was the same. I just knew that that was the end of my disease. I didn't know how, but I just knew it. And it was the case.
It's incredible because there's so many people listening to this. We all have gone through our own physical conditions, diseases.
Absolutely.
And I'm curious if someone is listening to this and they said, you know, they're suffering from something for 20 years and they just don't see a way out. Mm. They can't even figuratively imagine how they can get from their place now to a state of wholeness and complete healness.
Yes.
Complete healing. So what would you say to the person listening to this who is going through something and cannot see a way out?
Well, and it's the hardest, what I'm going to say. It's in order to heal, you need to let go of your desire to be cured, of your desire to be healed.
Fully accept.
Fully. And not just like, oh, I'm going to meditate on it and set mantras. I accept my disease. I accept. It doesn't work. You really need to accept it. And in the moment of that acceptance, you let go. And that's the moment when you remove yourself from blocking your healing process. You can't heal something that you not consider is yours. Or you can't heal something which you consider is wrong about you. So two things happen, right? We consider this disease doesn't belong to us. So we disconnect from it.
Yeah.
It's not mine.
This is not me.
This is not me.
I'm not supposed to have this.
Exactly. Why do I have it? It's wrong. And you obsess about healing it. Or you are so repulsed by the condition and you send so much negativity to your own condition. You know, it's horrible to have it. It makes me feel like that. It's, you know, my life is useless. That again, you're blocking. And it's not about not seeing people to cure it. But when you accept your condition, what happens, which I explain, is that right people will show up on your way to help you to cure it. If your body will guide you towards methods and ways and things you can do in order to speed it up, but not from the place of rejection, from the place of acceptance.
It's such a paradoxical concept, and
I know.
It's so true.
I know.
And your story, where the moment of desperation, where you're probably angry, in despair, and yet from that, the gift, the ultimate gift of surrender comes through.
Absolutely. And think about that. Often lives really has to completely knock us out.
The rock bottom.
So we finally awake.
Yes.
And let go of the concepts we've created. And so breaking you, and sort of pushing you to fall apart is never to destroy you, is to recreate you.
Mm. The phoenix rising from the flames.
Absolutely. It has to break what is not longer yours, what was never yours. What was the concept you created of yourself? And it breaks those concepts, those frames, so that you can actually liberate all the grievances and fears that were trapped inside of you behind those walls you've created around yourself.
Yeah.
So we need those breaks. We need the life to slap us and remind us, hey, you know?
It's the cosmic slap.
Exactly. It's time to let go.
Yeah.
Of this version of yourself. And then you create another. And it's gonna also be the one that you have to let go of at some point. Because it's a constant process of becoming and unbecoming. Creating and uncreating. Creating and destroying. And you need to be okay with destroying if you truly want to create in your life.
In those 10 days of Vipassana, what was the deepest realization that you had about yourself that helped you step into the new you?
That I didn't know anything about myself. And I think it's still a big, big, big philosophy that I have, and everything I teach about comes down to really unbecoming. And every time I caught myself of having some sort of idea about myself, I ask myself, is that true? And I realize that I am actually everything I think I am, and I am everything I think I am not.
Wow.
You need to be both. So if you want to tap to the wholeness within you, to that divinity, you need to realize that that divinity is everything. So I can't be something, one thing. And if I say I'm something, I automatically say I'm not something else. And that's simply not true. everything exists in a perfect polarity of perfect opposites. And you need to embody both in order to fully express yourself. So you can't embody, let's say, joy unless you embodied sadness. And almost not having a preference for either. Because by not having preference, you neutralize them and you create a perfect harmony between them. If you only put on the pedestal joy by rejecting the sadness, you are constantly charging the sadness by, you know, resisting it.
Yes.
Right? And so sadness will come to the surface for as long as you will reject it, so you can finally see it and realize there's nothing to fear. You know, life is not about finding happiness. Life is about finding acceptance and presence. Because happiness, again, it's a concept of some sort of long state of constant joy and satisfaction. And state, by definition, is something that is not permanent. And in one day, when you truly zoom in one day, we experience all of the spectrum of emotion.
Yes.
Happiness, sadness, frustration, anger, this and that. And it's supposed to be this way. Why all of us have access to the same spectrum of emotions? Because they are not something to resist. They are simply an information that tells us what's going on inside of us and information to guide us towards right places, right people, right situations. We want to have this spectrum at our disposal at all time. But this is not, no emotion is supposed to last. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to move through us. But our state that is beneath that is peace, is neutrality. Neutrality is the most beautiful state you can possibly have.
I call it staying in the center.
Exactly. It's like having a tornado, you know, and in the middle you have absolute stillness. Connecting to that stillness within you and whatever emotion will be present without classifying it as good or bad, saying, okay, what is this telling me?
Yes, yes. That's what is it. This teaching me? What does it symbolize?
That's it.
Ah, so beautiful. You know, you reminded me of when someone comes up to me and says, how are you? I don't know how to answer that question anymore because depending on the hour, I'm a completely different person. So if I say I'm happy now, life is great. Guess what? The universe is going to humble me in about 2 hours.
Yes.
If I say, oh, I'm feeling not so great, that's also not true.
Yeah.
Because a few moments from now, I might be experiencing some incredible joy.
Hmm.
And so I wonder, how do you answer the question when someone says, how are you?
I actually never allow people to ask that question because I ask them before, what is present for you? So what is present for you is the question, that the only question I'm interested in. Because I'm not interested in anything that happened yesterday or will happen or might not happen. I'm only interested in what is now.
Yes.
Because I can relate to it in that present moment. And if we stay in the story, in the fantasy, we are never present. And this is the problem of today's society. We constantly speak from concepts of our mind, of something that was in the past or a moment ago, something that might happen in the future. But rarely we check actually truly within ourselves, how do I feel right now? What is present for me? Where do I feel it? And you don't even have to know conceptually what does it mean, but notice where is the tension in your body? Does it have a shape? Does it have a color? Where do you feel it? That's what is present.
Mm.
Mm.
What is most present for you at this moment in life?
And this moment or at this moment in life?
At this moment in life.
At this moment in life. At this moment in life, I feel that there is this beautiful transition I am going through. There is so much wisdom, so much spaciousness, so many new beautiful opportunities, big expansion that I'm feeling. And lots of beautiful projects that I'm very excited about that I currently work on. And I really like where I am right now. It feels very good.
Mm, beautiful. And at this moment?
At this moment, I feel very peaceful, very grateful.
Mm.
I feel in harmony.
Beautiful. I want to ask you a little bit more about your book.
Yes.
Your book, Recreate Yourself. Mm-hmm. It's all about self-love.
Yes.
What is the difference between self-love and self-worth, or are they very much linked?
If you had a sense of self-love, you would not engage in the concepts of self-worth.
It wouldn't even be a question.
Because self-worth is putting yourself on some sort of scale. What scale?
Mm-hmm.
What scale? So it's a concept that you believe that one person or one thing can be measured against something else, right? Saying this is worth this much and this is worth that much. Can you measure the worth of two people? Who we are, again, even if we speak purely from observation, is indescribable. Can mind be measured? Mind can't be measured. Can your soul be measured? No. Can your energy body or astral body be measured? Energy, but perhaps to a certain degree. So the only part of what consists you that can be measured is your body. That's maybe 10% or 20% of who you are. So now we talk about, you know, both self-value and self-worth. It's like you are going to put a certain value on someone and measure that person against someone else in order to what? To have something or to
feel something.
To feel something. It's when you really deconstruct the concept, you realize it doesn't make sense. And so this concept was created by humans in the language so that we can control each other. And self-love would say everyone is interconnected. Everyone is equally, I wouldn't even use word valuable. I would use divine, equally divine.
Yes.
And unmeasurable.
Priceless.
Absolutely. And so I believe that you have the same capacity than me to heal, to transform, to empower yourself, to achieve whatever you want. And so as a teacher, I will never tell you I know more than you. I've experienced more, because that puts me on some sort of scale that you need, that I can give you something you don't have yet. But that's, again, putting myself in the system versus I can inspire you with my story because my story is different to your one. But I believe that you have exactly the same capacity to do everything I've done, just in a different way. And that's very different energy that you share with people. So any teachers, spiritual teachers, that are putting themselves above anyone are not the right teachers, because they didn't understand the concepts of oneness and self-love.
Mm. There's one thing you said in your book. You said, a while ago, I decided to drop my mask. And that was the day I promised myself that I would never cheat on myself again.
Yes.
And it's such a beautiful sentence, because everyone listening to this can relate to that feeling of cheating on yourself, or as I would put it, betraying yourself.
Betraying yourself, yes.
And for what? And for who?
Exactly.
And I'd love it if you can touch on that a little bit. And what does cheating on yourself mean to you in relation to self-love? Mm. How you realize that? Yeah. And what was that day where you decided, enough, yeah, no more of this?
It's basically compromising what you truly feel or desire in order to get a specific reaction of from your environment or create a specific situation. So with an agenda that you would have. So putting mask always have an agenda. I want people to like me. I want people to accept me. I want people to respect me. All of it, that's your agenda because you don't feel you are it already. And so we compromise what we truly desire and what we truly feel. And we do things that are against what we want to do. Or we are in a certain way it's not our truth. We manipulate our behaviors in order to get that specific reaction from other people. And when we are it, that construct, that mask, we can't be ever rejected for who we truly are. We can be only rejected for who we are not.
I love that. You say that in your book, we can never be rejected for who we are, only for who we are not. And you say, so clever.
So clever, because it's another protection mechanism.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to construct those masks. So if someone doesn't like it, well, they reject the mask. It's not true me.
Therefore, they can't hurt me.
I can't be hurt, right?
Uh-huh.
And when you start to unapologetically express who you truly are and what you truly feel and what is true to you, and you can feel it, yes, there is a risk you will be rejected. But it's so much less painful because you don't reject yourself.
Yes.
And rejection of other people, when you don't reject yourself, is actually can harm you.
It's a good signal.
It's a very good signal because then it simply allows you to truly attract people to your life that will support you, that will see you, that will resonate with who you are truly. And it's such a time saver to live this way. But of course, it's not always easy, and learning that and getting to that requires time as well.
Why do we fear rejection and why does it hurt so much?
I believe the biggest rejection we truly fear is our own rejection. And it's never the rejection of others, because what we are afraid other people will reject us for is the same judgment, is the same criticism that we have created towards ourselves. And so really the rejection of other is, and this is really important, let's pause it here. People never reject you, actually. They only reflect to you your own rejection. So if you don't reject something within yourself, you will not send that energy out. I'm rejectable, or this part of me is rejectable. And if, let's say I reject my voice.
Uh-huh.
As an example, if I have it in my subconscious, my voice is horrible, I'm going to attract people who will reflect to me the subconscious belief that I am not aware of, so I can work on it and shift it. So whenever someone rejects something in me, I pause myself and say, hold on, which part of me is rejecting that in me? And thank you so much to this person for showing that to me. So in other words, only things that are suppressed within you will express themselves externally to show you the truth about yourself. So whatever comes is just an information about what's going on inside of you.
Yeah.
That's it. That's how you shape your reality. That's how you shape relationship with people, through inner work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can fully integrate all the parts of you, all the parts, own them and accept them, I promise you, you will not experience that kind of rejection in your closest surrounding, because you will not have to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something you will have to work on.
It's beautiful because it reminds me of my journey with YouTube. I know that when I make a video and I speak from the heart and I'm in integrity and I say the truth for me, then I'm not afraid of any comments because I'm just saying what's true for me.
Absolutely.
And actually, in that state, no bad comments come at all.
Right?
It's been amazing. I've gotten almost zero hate.
It's fascinating how it works.
Because I'm standing in my center.
Yeah.
Sharing what's true for me.
Exactly.
And people, they sense the resonance of that.
And even if they disagree, they will still respect you because they will sense it's true to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
And then they'll leave to what resonates for them. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's beautiful. Well done.
So beautiful. So one thing I'm curious about is, where does the desire to people please come from? And conversely, the people that have no desire to people please, what do they understand or get that the people pleasers haven't understood yet?
You know, with people pleasing is similar that with the mask we touched upon a little bit. It's really trying to get that external validation in order to feel lovable, in order to feel worthy of love. So in other words, more people will like me, more I can like myself. More people will love me, more I can love myself, versus I will love myself and it doesn't matter how many people will reflect that to me. It's externalizing your something that you are not able to create within yourself in that moment. And so only people who are really disconnected on a deep, deep level from that self connection, self-love, self-validation will look for that externally. Right? Men who sleep with many women, people who try to be friends with everyone. All of those examples is looking for this constant self-validation through the external circumstances. And it's never ending. As long as you need to validate yourself for anything that is external, you are getting more further away of the connection that you could create within.
That thing you mentioned where you want to be friends with everyone. And also, I think the related thing is not wanting to say no to someone. Someone has a request for you or they asking you of something. I find it difficult sometimes to say no. Then I remember, okay, I have to honor my needs. I have to honor what's true for me. And I end up saying no, but there's still that little bit of guilt of like, I wish I could help them in the way that they want me to help them or and fulfill their request in the way they want to.
And you actually are, because this point comes down purely, entirely to trust, self-trust.
Uh-huh.
Knowing that, knowing, not believing, knowing, believe is a doubt. Knowing that if I act from my absolute self-alignment, automatically it's going to be good for other people. It's automatically, it's going to create alignment in all situation that I touch from that place of inner alignment. So only alignment can create alignment. Misalignment creates misalignment. So if I tell you, because I feel this is my truth, this is my alignment, I can't join, I can't help you, you know that that will be good for them.
Wow.
Meaning this gonna create in their environment, in their situation, something that will serve their greatest good. And every time, you know, I had a situation, I had to cancel dinner last moment or something. Every single time that I really had to say no to someone, and part of me was like, oh my God, I'm canceling 15 minutes before. This is super disrespectful. But I really felt like I'm not supposed to go. Every single time the person was like, oh my God, this is perfect. I spend the evening like that. I did this. I dive deep into, I don't know what, something happened.
Yeah.
Else.
That allowed them.
That was supposed
alignment.
To happen. Even though in the moment they were maybe upset with me, but later they always reflect it was good.
Wow.
And so it really learning that this is how it works And then with time, you build that trust.
Yes.
That I trust this will be good for you, even if you're upset with me right now. I know on the long term, this will serve your greatest good.
Yeah. Mm. If you stay in alignment, nothing can go out of place.
Alignment creates alignment.
Alignment creates alignment. Oh, I love that. What about the emotion of anger?
Mm-hmm.
This is something I find really interesting, because in the moment, sometimes anger feels like the right choice to express. It's like something wants to be expressed.
Mm-hmm.
But I always find that I regret it after,
mm-hmm.
because I think, I could have handled that better.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been kinder. I could have been more patient.
Sure.
And so the relationship between expressing my truth in the moment versus holding my tongue and just checking my emotions a little bit, letting myself simmer down. How do you see that in your life? And what is anger trying to teach us? What is it all about?
First of all, only accumulated anger can explode. So if you regularly numb your own anger, there will be situation in which it's going to be so accumulated within you that you are going to act in the way that can be really the one that you regret later on. Saying things you will regret, behaving in a way you will regret. But knowing how to feel anger without reacting on anger, that's the way.
Yes.
Right? Knowing, I'm noticing I'm angry. And anger, it's an active energy that has to go out.
Yes.
It can't stay in.
Can't be placated.
No. So you do have to do something. Once you're angry, you do have to do something with it. But there are ways you dance. You can, go and tap with pillows on your bed. Like there are ways you can do that. Things you can do that will be unharmful to other people and say, give me 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to like let it out and come back to you. And that's maturity.
Yes.
No one is telling you don't be angry. Anger is boundaries. Anger tells you where are your boundaries and what is okay, what is not okay. Anger is needed. But kids, watch what they do when they are little, right? When they're angry, they would just scream for a moment, tap with their hands and fists and feet on the ground. And 3 seconds later, they are laughing. They allow themselves to express that. We numbed it within ourselves completely because this society doesn't tolerate anger. But anger will never disappear. We just need to find better ways to sort of feel it in a safe way and express it in a safe way for yourself and others. But then we move to another part, why you are triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And what is triggering to you,
mm-hmm.
right? Is it because someone is walking into your space and sort of overposing them on you and you have this reaction of like stop and you get angry, etc.? Or is it because you've been triggered by something that they've done? And if you've been triggered by something that they've done, if there is no physical danger in the present moment, right? Trigger always lives in the past. It's never in the present moment. So if I don't have a situation that is actually really dangerous for me, an anger response is basically protection. And that is the only situation that can, that where the anger is in the present moment. All of that lives in the past. So in other words, your mind reads the situation that is happening through the lenses of what has already happened to you. It assesses the situation as similar situation to what has happened and respond with the same reaction. But really what it does is guiding you towards that situation that wasn't yet dissolved or fully understood and integrated. And it happens in order to help you to get to the root of your trigger. So whenever, I have this beautiful way of relating to people, whenever people let's say, give me any feedback, right? The only thing I'm doing is watching reaction of my body. I'm listening and then seeing if there is a trigger, if there is anger, if there is a resentment, if there is this need for justifying myself. It always is like this, you are not right, especially in relationships. Like, how dare you say that? You know, this is not me. But everything, if you stay in neutral space, if someone, your partner tells you, oh, you are this and that, and you feel nothing, not because of the numbness, but truly neutrality, it's a projection. But whenever there is a feeling rising in you, it's true. And there is a seed of truth. But not the truth, not whatever they say, but whatever your mind, your subconscious interprets that links to the story that was created way before. And so what I do is I take this situation, go in my corner and be like, okay, what do I accuse them of? Because you never get angry at the words they're saying. You get angry at whatever you interpret they're doing to you. So what is my accusation? My accusation is they're criticizing me. They are judging me. They are limiting me, let's say. And then I turn it back. How am I criticizing other people or myself? How am I judging other people or myself? How am I limiting other people or myself? And in every single case, there will be, okay, I am doing that. So this person is just reflecting back to me, what am I doing to myself? And it's every single time amazing opportunity. That's why we grow the most, if we allow, in a relationship. Because in friendship, we are rarely triggered, right? In a relationship, everything that is still unhealed and unintegrated and disconnected comes to the surface. Everything that was pushed down, rejected, shamed, comes to the surface to be healed, to be reunited, to be reintegrated.
You once said a relationship should not be perfect or should not be comfortable. I'm paraphrasing, but something to the effect of, if you're seeking a perfect relationship, that is not the relationship that will actually make you grow.
It won't. But there are, I noticed that there are people who will have problems within the relationships. There are people who have problems with their health. There are people who will have problems in their work environment. So you will pick most of the time one dominating area through which you grow. And that area will continuously sort of be there to really make you evolve. In other words, there is no moment in time when everything can be perfect, because then you are not growing. There is no feedback. There is no creation happening. And so in my case, relationship is definitely the one. I have no problem in my job, in my work. Right now, since, you know, 16 years, I've been perfectly healthy. There's no problems in my life, but relationship will be the one that will be always the most demanding and revealing and exhausting sometimes. Like, I feel like it's full-time job, right? But this is what I choose as well.
Yeah.
Because this is my life mission.
Is that like our dharma? Like, whichever area we're most triggered by or spiky moments are arriving in that area?
I believe that. Yes. I think, like, you know, this will be very individual to every person, but it might shift.
Sure.
In your life, you know, you will start with this area, but there will always be one. Notice that just is a little bit unperfect and gets you more triggered than the other areas. Money, for instance, right? Big, big topic. So I love growing through the relationship, and I spent a lot of time in understanding relationships and communication and relating. And that is definitely, I hope this will one day will become another book.
Beautiful. What is the biggest lesson you've learned in relationships in the last 12 months?
my gosh, there has been so many in the last 12 months. Okay, this is the big one. I understood to which point we fall in love with the ideas of the other, of ourselves, and of the love itself. We enter a relationship that is fully constructed in ideas and concepts. I am with whoever you say you are, rather with who you truly are. You are with whoever I say I am, rather than who I truly am. And we are creating this base of love that is all built on the concept of love we've created in our head. And it has nothing to do with the truth. And I realize how much people in general are functioning in those three concepts. And then all these fractions happen because you are not matching my idea of you. You are not matching who you say you are. And I'm not matching who I say I am. Because who I say I am is my concept of myself that often has nothing to do with who I truly am. So if we remove those concepts, I enter to the union with you, not being attached to anything you say, and fully being present and discovering you. Can I fall in love with you every single day for truly for who you are?
Not who you say you are.
Yeah, not for the concepts you've created. And then that will remove completely this disappointment, because if you don't have a concept to compare the person against, then you have nothing to be disappointed about. And this is the foundation of unconditional love, of allowing the other person to be a human, to hold them in their strength, in their weakness, to simply learn to love yourself and all the aspects of self through learning to love all the aspects of your partner. And even if you will not stay together, still holding that unconditional love, because realizing that separation doesn't exist, right? And it's another concept. And if you can love someone and still choose to not be them, to not be with them, right? And it's so important to discover the truth of who you truly are and what is your essence, and allow the other person to also hold the space for them to discover their truth. Rather than holding them to that idea, to that person you need them to become in order to love them, and punishing them every single time they're not that person.
And how have you personally, in your current relationship, navigated that when you notice that, oh, I have an idea of who this person has to be? How do you then pull back from the idea and look at the truth?
Very honestly, I don't think it's ever-ending process, because it's a gigantic task, and we've been programmed for so many years to live in those concepts. Like, imagine when you are a child, your parents ask you, "Hey, who do you want to be when you grow up?" In 20 years, so you are asked to go from the present moment, from your playful, you know, everyday environment, to project yourself 20 years ahead, and then they will hold your own parents that will hold upon you that idea you gave them or they created about you. You need to become this, you need to become that. So automatically, this is what we do to each other. And it becomes so heavy. And so in my case, it's a constant reminder. It's a constant reminder of bringing myself to the present moment. and being and accepting everything that there is, rather than what I would like this to be. It's really removing this chase for otherness in your life, in yourself, in the other. If I'm not okay with who you are right now, and that's okay as well, if you are not okay with where someone is, if there is no compatibility, it's okay. But it's to allow yourself to see that. But if you're starting a relationship based on you are not who I want to be, but you will get there, it's a constant pressure. Constant pressure and constant disappointment. And they will feel it. And it's not empowering. It's very disempowering. And so it's really saying and being with people as they are here and now. So if, in other words, would I still be with this person if nothing changes? Would I be okay with myself if nothing changes? And getting to the point where you can answer yes.
Yeah. I can think of so many cases in my life and also other people's lives where when you ask that question and the answer is no, but you don't want to hear it or see it. You want to stay in the idea that they will change or you will change or you will both change.
It's a promise.
How do you sort of balance the acceptance piece, accepting someone as they are, working with that, loving that, versus deciding there's too much incompatibility here?
It's difficult if you already entered the relationship based on ideas. Because if you enter the relationship based on the ideas and the fantasy, most likely it won't work. Unless you will do enormous amount of work.
To deconstruct that.
But if you are not yet in, and you can, it's absolutely possible. It's just a lot of work, I won't lie. Because it really is removing all of the expectations and accepting someone for who they are. But if you enter a relationship or if you're single and you're looking for a partner, really, this is amazing opportunity for you to really check, see them, first of all. Don't project on them. Don't try to make them tick all the boxes because that's another idea. Life is always giving you what is exactly right in that specific moment. There are no person, no partner that is not a perfect partner in your life. Every person is a perfect person in that specific moment. Doesn't matter if it lasts a week, a month, 2 years, 5 years. They will stay for as long as they need to stay. But every person shows you exactly where you are at. So it's really to, first of all, understand that and open up to that. And then really allow yourself to see them for who they are and not for who you want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you will only be able to remove that expectations from them if you have already removed that expectations from yourself. So the first step is to do that work on yourself.
The self-love.
Yeah, is to remove the concepts of self. So the question, am I okay? Would I be okay if this is what I'm getting for the rest of my life? If nothing has changed, if nothing would change within me, anymore, would I be okay with that? And if when you will truly get to the answer yes, okay, now you're ready. And of course people will change. Of course they will transform. But they will transform and change and evolve and expand much faster if there is no pressure. If there is freedom. Because now you are holding space for them. It's like, I love you as you are. You don't have to be anything else. And so what happens? How would that feel to you to feel that you want to explore yourself?
Mm.
You want to expand. You want to grow.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, let's see what else is there within me. What kind of possibilities? Now you're really holding space for someone. But if someone is there like, hey, you are not good enough. You are not this. You are not that. Energetically feel it. It makes you shrink. And it closes you up so you can't expand. Because someone is telling you, if you will not be that, I won't love you.
Yeah.
And so it creates the very opposite effect.
You know where I notice it too is when I meet someone, say at a networking event, and they're a little bit closed off, even though I'm generally a very open-hearted person, I like to go deep with people, I can't help but also close off.
You mirror, of course.
I literally cannot open up to them because I feel that they're not feeling safe with me, and somehow I can't feel safe with them.
Yeah.
And it's the most fascinating thing because I can logically tell myself, well, but you act so open with all your other friends. And yet it's like the mirroring effect.
Absolutely. And it's beautiful to have that ability that you can feel it within your body, that you can feel what they are feeling, because it is an ability. But it's really allowing them to be that, to not saying this is wrong. And she would have a preference for something else.
I almost wish I could be more open with them to raise
but
their frequency
again,
a little bit.
This is, again, you're trying to change them.
Mm.
And it's not in trying to change someone that you would remove that resistance. It's saying to them, it's absolutely okay.
Yeah.
We can be in this distance right now, in this discomfort. And in accepting that, not putting pressure on them to be different, they will open up, because it's the pressure that creates more resistance. If they will feel you want them to open up, right? It's the energy. One is pushing too hard. And sometimes we do it as unconsciously because we want to get close. We become almost needy. You know, the exaggeration of that would be neediness and trying to, you know, get close to people by almost forcing them. And if someone was doing that to you, what would happen?
You back off.
Of course you do. So it's really to just allow people to be in any state that is present for them. This might not have anything to do with you in that moment. That might be going through some really hard situation at home. They only feel safe with their close friends. They have no desire to speaking to strangers or to sharing what they go through. We don't know. And yet, we often make it all about ourselves.
So true.
Why this person is not opening up? Am I not good enough? Am I not this and that? Let go. Let go. And not try to understand. Simply allow.
For you personally, where do you find the edge or the challenge for you when it comes to other people, relationships, social dynamics?
I don't think I do anymore, but I used to did. I used to did a lot. Now, it really is not a problem anymore. But I believe it's because I created such a beautiful relationship with myself. What I can say, what is sometimes overwhelming, is that I have the same capacity as you. I feel everything. I feel every emotion in the body. If someone is standing next to me, I know exactly what they're feeling. And more I worked on expanding my capacity to feel, more I could feel not only myself, but also other people. So sometimes it becomes simply overwhelming being in the room of people where there is all sort of emotions. But it's also, you know, I get so many people asking me, how can I protect myself, you know? And there's all this protect myself from this energy, from this. And I really disagree with that concept, because again, protection is created in separation. You believe that you need to protect yourself from something, that something can do something to you that will harm you. And really is another concept that is created way before, not in the present moment. Nothing can happen to you. I can feel all of it and still hold the space for that. And so with understanding that everything is interconnected and every moment holds treasures, every moment is beautiful exactly as they are, it's really allowing every situation to be exactly as it is without trying to change it or be somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
wanting to be somewhere else. And you will discover when you remove that idea, I want to be somewhere else, I should be somewhere, I will be, should be doing something different, this person should be behaving differently with me, and trying to fix something based on an idea, you realize that actually when you let go, the situation will bring you beautiful possibilities, but they will be much different to what you have imagined.
Mm.
And it's allowing to invite every moment to offer you those gifts, but without the need of guessing what those gifts will are.
Mm-hmm. We want to be surprised.
Exactly. And yet it's so difficult.
Yes.
Because I promise you, every situation, every moment of your life holds gifts.
Yes.
And it's up to you if you can extract them, if you can see them, and if you can receive them.
100% agree. Mm. Every moment. And even especially the painful moments.
Oh my God. Oh, absolutely.
Have the biggest gifts if you can just get curious and peer a little yes. bit deeper.
Yes, exactly. I couldn't agree more.
Do you remember the moment where, when you asked that question, would I accept myself if I stayed exactly as I am? Where was the moment for you where you were able to say a whole, full-hearted yes to that question?
I think it was a process that definitely started at my Vipassana retreat and then evolved over time, because at first, again, I was still in idea of me. So I was accepting the idea. Oh, this is who I am. So yes, I accept myself like that. But then the truth kicked in. The truth that I am everything. And so I will have the aspects that are extremely positive and extremely negative, because they're part of the same thing. They are its opposites. Right? They are just reflecting different sides, like yin yang. And so I need both. And so with discovering or sometimes seeing, I don't know, let's say you have a partner who is extreme narcissist, manipulative, judgmental, transactional. If you have attracted that, and there are many women who have, and you're like, there is this repulsion and saying, oh my God, this is the person, he's wrong, he's hurting me. But I had to get to the point when I was able to say, I have those aspects. Maybe they are not expressing themselves that drastically. Maybe I'm not using them that much to hurt other people, but I have them. I have them within me.
Everything we see in another,
everything
we see it in ourselves, we have it in ourselves.
Yeah. And that was the hardest, to accept what I considered extremely rejectable and shameful. And I think all of us have this capacity to be judgmental, opportunistic, manipulative, all of it, self-centered, etc. And accepting it will actually neutralize it. And if you don't accept that part of you, it will express itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I feel so, you.
Unconsciously. And you will do that without even realizing you are doing it. And you will reject it in yourself and in other people, because you will be ashamed of being like that. And it's like, no, this is not who I am. 100% not. But why not?
You're touching on something so important here, because we all have the light and the dark within us.
Yes.
And for me, I think one of the greatest gifts for me was realizing I'm okay with most of my dark parts. I'm comfortable with it. And I even love them to some degree. Yeah. I may not express them, like you said, drastically, yeah, because I know it will hurt others.
And you won't if you accept them. You won't have to.
Exactly. Exactly. This is so, so powerful. So I hope everyone listening can hear this. When you accept the darkness in you, it doesn't have to rear its head.
Absolutely. The darkness is the anchor for your light. If you don't accept your darkness, you can't embody your light, because your light doesn't have a ground to be anchored. You anchored your light in your darkness. So there is so many people who only have this preference in light, right? Oh, good, if and this is bad. I can't have a contact with this person. I can't even see them. Like, hold on. What are you disconnecting from within yourself right now that you are doing that? And so only by taking all that darkness within you and saying, I see you and I accept you and you are part of me and you are my, you know, part of my, the polarity of everything that is good about me. Now you can truly connect to your bright side, to your light, to your inner gifts. You can't do it unless you integrated that. And it's by integration of those both, you create the neutrality that will stop those bad qualities manifest themselves subconsciously or externally through other people to show you, to point you out to that, hey, you need to accept this, you still need to integrate that. There won't be a need because you will be able to say, yes, I can absolutely manipulate people. Of course. But I don't have to. Right? And I promise you, through your entire life, there were 100% you had moments in your life when you were all of it. When you have to, because those are protective mechanisms we developed in order to feel safe, in order to do something to protect ourselves. So you do have them and have them. But you won't have to use them if you fully accept that you are everything.
When we do, let's say, make a mistake and those parts of us come out because we haven't fully integrated them. Yep. How do we forgive ourselves for hurting someone, for doing the wrong thing in the moment, making the drastic choice that should not have been made if you were more in your center?
Absolutely.
The forgiveness part, I feel, is so crucial to the self-love. And I'm curious if you can touch on that.
Yeah. And you don't have to forgive yourself anything if you understand. If you understand that you're only human and you are exactly where you are supposed to be, right? And so how you reacted was the perfect reaction based on where you are at and what is available at your disposal and the situation you are in. And sometimes, this is really important, in the same way we activate in other people reacting in a certain way to show us a truth about us, we will as well feel the other people's energy and behave in a way that might be out of ordinary for us to show them what they need to see.
The puzzle pieces for them.
And so sometimes you will behave in a very strange way.
Yes.
But it's because their energy has activated that in you in order to show them. For example, if some people will have in their frequency, I'm not lovable, I'm to be disrespected, you will find yourself not knowing why you are disrespecting them. But it's not because you want to disrespect them, it's because they have it still in their frequency and they will activate that in every person they encounter, right? So it's also to find that trust that whatever comes up has to come up and it's perfect. And yet if you really feel bad about really doing something wrong, the first thing is to accept. The second thing is to realize, oh, okay, wow, that was my manipulative side. Oh, I did it because I'm actually afraid of, you know, something else. And that was my reaction. And simply admit that. Own it. It will feel so good if you can own it. You know what? I'm really sorry. This was crazy behavior. But actually, why I did that was because I'm truly afraid of you leaving right now and I'm creating all these fights in order to feel less close to you so that the separation isn't painful so much.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's to have that awareness and communicate that. And when you can communicate that truth, you will see it automatically, the anger in the other or disappointment dissolves
Because they understand.
They understand. So there's nothing to forgive. They will be like, oh, my darling, of course, come here.
So powerful.
It's so powerful.
it's the understanding piece.
It's, yes.
If we can understand why we did something, the forgiveness comes naturally.
There is nothing to forgive, if you understand. Yes. Mm.
Let me ask you about your relationship with plant medicine and psychedelics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How important have psychedelics been in your journey? And what has been the most profound experiences that have touched you?
Mm-hmm. I've done ayahuasca, I've done San Pedro, I've done MDMA therapy, LSD, psilocybin. So I've experienced
a wide gamut.
And I have to say that my most profound experiences that got me to altered states of consciousness were not through psychedelics.
Mm.
None of them.
Breathwork
and deep meditation.
Okay.
Theta meditation. So non-dualistic approach. I have a very specific meditation that I'm practicing and teaching people, where it's really reconnection to the source, removing the self. And it can get you to the place that is absolutely incomparable to anything I've experienced before. So it was great for me to have that comparison and be like, okay, well, I've done it all, not once. I went deep on this. I've done documentary movie on enhanced states of consciousness, where I interviewed an expert from all around the world in terms of neuroscience, meditation, psychedelics. So I had big, big knowledge on what it can do to you. And don't understand me wrong, I do believe for certain people it can be a massive shortcut, because it recreates a new neural pathways that your mind would take normally a years of practice of meditation in order to get to the same state. So it is a massive shortcut, but it's almost like a first door. And then once your brain knows how to get there, it can actually get there naturally. Because I started meditation prior psychedelics and was very deep in the practice, my neural pathways were already created. So nothing happened that was deeper.
Ah, interesting.
Interesting,
even
right?
Even on ayahuasca.
On San Pedro, I get to the same states naturally.
Through meditation
and breath work.
Can you talk to me about your meditation practice and maybe something people can incorporate into their lives? Or
So the meditations I do, it's really going back to non-dualistic state of consciousness, where we dissolve everything that exists. It's not a visualization. It's not a mantra-based meditation. It's the meditation when you learn to completely silence the mind and sit in the spaciousness of your being with no visual projection whatsoever. And so it's whenever thoughts would come in that space, you will notice them, you will acknowledge them, and you will let them go, going back to the stillness until you can prolong the state of that stillness for enough time to sort of drop deeper. And every time when you train that, every time those spaces between your thoughts, they become larger and larger and longer. And you can drop deeper and deeper. And that in that deep state of meditation, you have those moments of enlightenment, of your intuition, ideas, deep ideas that can show up, understandings, integration. You start to see yourself, your life, everything from a very different perspective that creates a complete wholeness within yourself. And so it's a practice that has to be sort of, you know, mastered to get, of course, to those deeper states. But in a few already meditation, you have You can have profound experiences of consciousness. And it's really going back to that awareness that is aware. When it comes to breath work, when you increase the oxygen within your body and you go through that step of hyperventilation, I think that's the right word, you get yourself, you basically stop your mind from thinking and you fully go back into your body, allowing your basically break through the patterns of your thoughts and touch what is on the other side.
The raw substrate.
Exactly. And you can really reach amazing states of altered states of consciousness through that practice. So you have all of those different practices and different methods, shamanic, biodynamic, etc. And all of them have a different way to get you to the same space. But really, it's all getting the same to the same space. The techniques might be different, but we are all reaching that stillness within ourselves, right? When really we can have flow of ideas, flow states, and that deep, deep awareness that helps us to understand ourselves and life.
How have altered states of consciousness affected your relationship with the divine and your understanding of that stillness?
That's a great question. They allowed me to touch the divinity that was within me. But it's important that seeking the altered states doesn't become your obsession, because it's still looking for otherness to what is present. Reaching and touching those states made me unquestionably believe in the divine essence that is within us. But once I believed and knew, absolutely knew within myself, who am I, and I am way more than what I can see, what I can perceive, and that I am indescribable, I stopped needing those altered states, because it was enough what was here and now. The present moment became enough, because it almost becomes like a part of what you can see about yourself, that you bring here. And so you no longer need to go anywhere else to reach that.
Yeah. Yeah. You carry it with you.
All the time.
I see it as I go to psychedelics when I feel like I need a tune-up. I feel like, okay, I'm a little bit off center now. Let's see if I can retune myself with the help of this plant medicine. And every time I get the downloads, the insights, the homework, and a reconnection to source.
Exactly.
And then I'm like, okay. Now I'm back in my divine. I can go forth in the 3D.
Absolutely. Because all it is, it's disassociation from your mind. It's stopping the ego for a moment. It's stopping you from, it disconnects you from the idea of self. So if you can do it consciously, yes, psychedelics are a great way, or meditation or breathwork, to remind you that you are not it. You are not what you think you are. And it stops this ego, stops the self-image, and connects you to the truth. And it's like, okay, now I remember again.
It's exactly that. yes, I remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's such a beautiful feeling.
It is. It's so beautiful.
Yes.
Dorota, it's been such an amazing conversation. I'm so grateful for your presence, your wisdom, your vast knowledge.
Thank you.
Is there something we haven't touched on, or something that you would like to share with the listeners as a final note of how they can lead a more aligned, loving life?
I would say, if I had to really give people one exercise to practice over and over again, I would say, ask yourself in every moment when you feel discomfort, when you feel disappointed, whenever you feel unhappy, is why can I change my perception of the situation? And could I be happy and satisfied with where I am here and now? And what could I do in order to make this moment right now better, so that I never want to be anywhere else? And if you can really train yourself in making every moment of your life special, exactly where you are, with what is at your disposal.
And there's so much.
Looking for those gifts in every moment, extract them and receive them. I think this is the first step to learning how to be fully present.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Where can people find you if they would like to vibe with your energy?
So you can, anyone who is interested in all those glimpses of wisdom, you can follow me on my Instagram, Dorota Stańczyk Art, or you can check my website, dorotastańczyk.com, and there will be all the informations about all my upcoming events, retreats, my book, my coaching, and any projects I might be working on.
Beautiful. Go check out Dorota's book, Recreate Yourself.
Yes.
What is the subtitle?
Embracing Greatest Self-Love and Self-Awareness. But I might be completely wrong. It's been a while.
Recreate Yourself.
Yes.
It's a beautiful book. I just started reading it and I'm getting so many insights and lessons.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. That means the world.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, so if you're still listening and you've made it this far, I want to thank you personally. You are one of the OGs, the true fans of the podcast. Not many people listen to the end, so if you've actually made it this far, I don't take that for granted. I appreciate you so much, and I invite you to reach out to me personally. I'd love to hear what episodes you most enjoyed, what type of topics, and what type of guests you'd love to see in the future. Feel free to message me on Instagram, or you can email me if you sign up to my newsletter and just hit reply to the welcome email. I'll be sure to read it. Now, if you have a moment to rate the podcast on Apple or Spotify, that would help me out so much. I super appreciate that. And if you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast on YouTube, please do me a favor and go to youtube.com/@JamesXanderTripp. I'm trying to get to 1,000 subscribers, so every subscriber counts. One last thing, I have another podcast where I do solo episodes, mostly about psychedelics, but I also share life lessons and all sorts of insights. So if you search for The Microdose, you can find my second podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And finally, I just launched a mindset course called Unlock God Mode. So in the next audio, you'll hear more details about my course. If you're not interested, feel free to skip to the next episode. Again, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. It means the world to me. Feel free to share this episode with a friend that you think might enjoy it, and I'll see you next week. If you enjoyed this episode, you might enjoy my brand new audio course, Unlock God Mode. Unlock God Mode is a 4-week experience where every day you'll get a 15-minute audio lesson that gives you frameworks, tools, and perspectives to upgrade your relationship with life. In the same way that mushrooms give you insights that help you up-level in the video game of life, I designed this course to do the same thing for you. I've compiled every lesson that I learned through psychedelics, through meditation, through my spiritual work, through life. I've put my best tools in this course so that no matter who you are, if you choose to go on this adventure with me, you're going to learn some amazing frameworks. You're going to learn to see life with new eyes. You will improve your relationship with life, and by extension, your life will improve. If you're interested in more details, go to jamesxander.com/godmode or use the link in the show notes. Use the promo code SHROOMS for a special discount. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I deeply appreciate you. Feel free to reach out to me through my newsletter. Go to jameszander.com to sign up. I'd love to connect. This episode is sponsored by magicmush.ca. If you're looking for an online dispensary for magic mushrooms, mushroom chocolate, and other high-quality psychedelic products, head over to magicmush.ca and use the promo code JAMES to get 25% off. Thank you for listening, and have a beautiful trip.